Hey there, RightsCast Network listeners. It's me, RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell, popping in before this episode gets started. That's how you know this is important. Well, what could I possibly have to say before an episode even gets started? No, this isn't an ad. This is me letting you know that what you are about to hear is the first ever episode in the history of the RightsCast Network that has not been hosted by me. Yes. That's right. This episode of Biblio Breakdown features a new host we are bringing into the network for these episodes that will debut on the fifth Friday of every month for the rest of the year. And the host I am proud to introduce you to is none other than Ekta Garg. You might recognize Ekta's name from the very first Profiles in Encouragement episode that debuted a month or so ago. Really looking forward to bringing Ekta on full time as the host of the Biblio Breakdown program. So, just wanted to give you advance notice that you won't be hearing my voice once we get through network ID here in just a moment. No, you will be with Ekta, and I promise you, you are in excellent hands. So without further ado, let's get to the very first Biblio Breakdown episode hosted by new show host, Ekta Garg. This is the RightsCast Network. Brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association. And always streaming at rightscast.net.
There are books for all seasons and all moods. Some books are meant for easy consumption. Thrillers, beach reads, romances. At times, readers want something fast and entertaining. It's the same reason we watch sitcoms or superhero movies. Sometimes, though, you want a book to say, wait, listen, pay attention. These are the books that make you sit back for a moment because of the beauty of a sentence or a paragraph. These are the characters who invite you with whispers and glances into their story worlds. These are the stories that cultivate in you the willingness to linger. Crafting such a manuscript takes care and time and patience, but it can be done. The result is a book rich with characters and descriptions that will make your reader's eyes shine with anticipation for your next story. Hi there, I'm Ekta Garg, a reviewer, editor, author, and dreamer of stories and books, and I'm delighted to be your host for this episode of Biblio Breakdown here on the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association. In this episode of Biblio Breakdown, we're talking about patient storytelling in the context of Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. I'll be offering analysis and writing exercises along the way so you can see what this book has done well and put it to practice in your own writing. Let's get started. In August 2018, an acclaimed wildlife researcher released her debut novel. A month later, Reese Witherspoon chose Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens for her latest book club pick. Between that and word of mouth, a domino effect took place. The book has more than 46,000 reviews on Amazon, averaging 4.8 out of 5 stars. According to the New York Times, Putnam, the book's publisher, had to go back to the printer almost 40 times to keep up with demand for copies. Now there's a movie deal in the works. If I had gotten this book as an advanced reviewer copy and known what it was, I would have been doing the online version of jumping up and down and demanding everyone's attention, using every single outlet at my disposal for everyone to read this book already. Of course, Kaya wouldn't have approved of that at all. She would have run from her shack in the marsh and waited for all the attention to die down. As the main character in Crawdads, Kaya becomes a published author herself, and her editor has to beg her for a meeting that becomes a pivotal point of the story. But I'm getting ahead of myself. If you haven't read the book, here's a quick synopsis. It's 1956, and Kaya Clark lives in a shack in the marshlands of North Carolina near the tiny town of Barkley Cove. The shack used to belong to her entire family, her four older siblings, her ma and pa. But one by one, they left. First Ma, when Kaya was six. Then her three oldest siblings. The fourth, her brother Jody, held out for a while, but finally he couldn't take the beatings anymore. When Kaya is left with Pa, she hides from his rage and endures his mopey moods. He starts to change a little, and Kaya starts to think times have changed for good. Then a letter comes from Ma. Kaya can't read, so she has no idea what it says, but the letter undoes Pa. He drifts away like all the others, leaving 10-year-old Kaya to figure everything out for herself. She experiences every emotion under the sun. But in the end, one truth stares her down in the tiny kitchen with the wood stove. She has to take care of herself. Until, that is, she meets Tate. Tate, who shares her love for the marsh and its creatures. Tate, who teaches Kaya about why her body is behaving strangely when she crosses into womanhood. Tate, who takes her heart all the way to college, leaving behind promises of love. When he doesn't come back, Kaya finds herself distracted by Chase Andrews. Chase is Barkley Cove's football star, a looker, and the boy every girl wants. He sees Kaya as a conquest, but then starts to fall for her. The day Chase Andrews turns up dead, though, everyone starts looking at Kaya slantways. She's the marsh girl, and they've known for years that she's bizarre, wild, an anomaly. Everyone knows how she and Chase were carrying on and how it must have upset her when Chase married someone else. It only makes sense, then, to put Kaya on trial for Chase's murder. There are so many things I love about this book. It captures readers from its first pages. Right from the opening lines of the dialogue, author Delia Owens sets the tone and the mood for the story. She writes, "Marsh is not swamp. Marsh is a space of light, where grass grows in water and water flows into the sky." In the next paragraph, Owens continues to make the distinction. Compared to the marsh, the swamp is quiet because decomposition is cellular work. Life decays and reeks and returns to the rotted duff, a poignant wallow of death begetting life. The last paragraph of the prologue explains why it's necessary to understand the difference between a marsh and a swamp. It says, "On the morning of October 30th, 1969, the body of Chase Andrews lay in the swamp, which would have absorbed it silently, routinely, hiding it for good. A swamp knows all about death and doesn't necessarily define it as a tragedy, certainly not a sin." Before this, if anyone thinks this is going to be a story about a girl growing up in the marsh, this tells them they've got another thing coming. This isn't just a story about the marshlands of North Carolina. It's about a murder. Of course, there are chapters about the marshlands, but not once will readers get bored. Owens's own background and training guarantee that. For more than two decades, she and her former husband studied lions and zebras in Africa. Do you know what lions do for most of the day? They sleep. Think about the patience required to watch animals that spend so much time dozing. At some point, you'd notice other things. You'd notice the way the wind sounds, the way the earth smells. You'd get a chance to see the sky light up or darken in 100 different ways. And you would, of course, get to observe the animals, because lions also have their prides, their communal groups. And like any group, animal or human, they have their inner politics and their spats, their love for one another and their deep defense if anyone tries to mess with them. They have routines and good days and bad days. Owens took all of that patience and time and crystallized it for readers. She put it together in the story of Kaya, a girl who feels every ounce of the pain of being left behind. Kaya can't even read until she's 14. She's aware on one level that she's vulnerable, but she teaches herself to survive on grits and root vegetables. She deals with people in town as little as possible, preferring the company of the seagulls. Even when Tate teaches her to read and write, her world continues to expand and contract. It expands in the formalization of her education of the animals and the marsh she loves so much, and it contracts around the love she has for this boy who represents all the good things about her life. Like the way Tate earns Kaya's trust, one page at a time, Owens develops the story at a pace that invites readers into the marsh. She tells readers to step softly, putting a metaphorical finger to her lips, even as she beckons her audience to lean closer. The marsh girl is learning to love and learning to read and learning that she, too, has talents. That's why it hurts so much when Tate leaves and doesn't come back like he promised. At least, he doesn't come back right away. By the time he does, he learns Kaya has been spending her time with Chase. But for Kaya, Chase is more of a band-aid over the deep wound in her heart. Nevertheless, when Kaya is accused of Chase's murder, Tate remains steadfast in his faithfulness. Kaya realizes he's always been there, like the marsh has always been there. And just like the marsh looks different on different days, depending on the weather, her relationship with Tate will take on different faces as well. Owens accomplishes an amazing feat. Even as she's giving readers every reason to slow down and get to know Kaya in a way that wouldn't disturb the protagonist, she's also teasing readers with the details of Chase's murder. The people who come forward to speak for or against Kaya, the deep prejudice in the town that sidelines people of different races and different lifestyles. Even as Kaya resents the way the residents of Barkley Cove look down on her, she wishes desperately for their approval. Their love. The love that she's always wanted. The book is one that reaches deep inside and urges readers to come to the edge of a shore and breathe in the air, to listen to the water lapping against the sand. For your first writing exercise, I'd like you to go outside on a nice day and sit on the grass. Make sure you're alone, but don't forget something to write with. You can bring a journal, a scrap of paper, or even a device or a laptop. Now, take 10 minutes and just listen. Pay attention to what you hear and see. Don't do any writing yet. Don't force your mind to go in any specific direction. Just observe and listen. Consider how things sound, how the air smells, how it feels. After the 10 minutes are done, spend 10 minutes recording what you heard and saw. Don't stop writing until the 10 minutes are up, and don't feel silly if you just use phrases or even single words at first. Every thought you record is important. Now, sit back and look at what you have. Think about what those few moments of quiet contemplation did to your powers of observation. Look at how much attention you paid to what is often the backdrop of our stories. Look at the details you recorded and consider how you might use those details to build a scene one quiet moment at a time. Sometimes we need to take a moment and let the world into our minds, which might not make sense at first glance. In our digitally driven world, we're consuming information all day. How often, though, do we let that information, or anything else for that matter, go deep into our hearts? Where the crawdads sing goes there, and with enough practice, so can you.
Remember when I said you wouldn't be hearing from me for the rest of the episode? Well, I lied. We've got ads, yes. We've still got ads, and this is an important one, so make sure you're really listening here. This episode is brought to you by the Wisconsin Writers Association and their Jade Ring Writing Contest. If you are listening to this episode between its debut date and June 5th, 2020, there is still an opportunity to submit your fiction, your nonfiction, and your poetry to the 72nd annual Jade Ring Contest. And this is a contest you do not want to miss out on, because if you are selected as a winner, aside from winning the coveted Jade Ring, there are also cash prizes in play, and you could be published in Wisconsin People and Ideas magazine, as well as the Creative Wisconsin Anthology. So, if you're sitting on a short piece of fiction, nonfiction, or poetry, and it is still between May 29th and June 5th, 2020, head to wiwrite.org/contests, where you can learn more about the Jade Ring Writing Contest and submit your work for consideration. Time is running out here, folks. This is the absolute last time you're going to hear about the Jade Ring from me this year. So before the window closes, head to wiwrite.org/contests and get those submissions in.
Dozens of writing and publishing experts offer advice on what not to do when writing a story or novel. Don't spend paragraphs on description. Don't head hop, that is, go from one character's point of view to another without some sort of break. Don't linger in the moment. Keep the action moving, otherwise readers get bored and drop your work. In Where the Crawdads Sing, Delia Owens breaks all of these rules and more, and it works every single time. As an editor, I feel obligated to add a disclaimer here. Owen spent almost a decade writing this novel. She didn't dash it off over a weekend. Also, it wasn't her first publishing credit. She's written 3 well-received nonfiction wildlife guides. The biggest asset that allowed Owens to break the rules, though, is that she's an expert on her subject matter. Owens wanted to write about a girl who lives in the marsh, and she knew what that experience would be like because growing up in Georgia, Owens herself did many of the same activities that Kaya does. Her authenticity and the storytelling shines, and that shine allows us to blink away some of those broken rules. In other words, she broke the rules because she has a command of language and her story world. Please know that you must do the same. You must understand your story world and the plot you want to write front and back. Only then can you see where to follow the trodden path and where to deviate from it. I'd like to take the three things I mentioned, description, point of view, and pacing, and talk about how Owens did what she did. First, description. The book itself is an homage to writing long descriptions that work. There are so many great paragraphs of it. The thing that surprised me, delighted me really, about Owens's work is the way her prose jumps out. She doesn't follow the same old ways of talking about things. For example, in chapter 23, Kaya and second boyfriend Chase are in a boat headed to a remote shore. The narration says, "Up ahead, Point Beach unfolded into the water like a brilliant white fan." Owens could have said it any one of 100 other ways, but she uses the simile, like a brilliant white fan, to paint the picture. When I read that, right away I knew what Point Beach looked like. Owens also uses her description to move the story forward. The book is part coming of age, part murder mystery, and Owens alternates between the two storylines that eventually intersect. In chapter 10, the sheriff and his deputy decide to inspect the fire tower where Chase's body was found. The chapter begins, "Sand keeps secrets better than mud." As they walked along the track, looking for vehicle treads other than their own, sand grains shifted into formless dimples with every step. Then, at the mud holes and swampy areas near the tower, a profusion of detailed stories revealed themselves. A raccoon with her four young had trailed in and out of the muck. A snail had woven a lacy pattern interrupted by the arrival of a bear, and a small turtle had lain in the cool mud, its belly forming a smooth, shallow bowl. The author is giving us a clue about the murder, although we can't quite make sense of it yet. The way she describes the terrain, though, lets us know that we're looking at something important, something that will come up later, and it does. Owens confirms this at the end of the short chapter with the last paragraph that says, "They stood looking around. The rest of the small half-moon beach was covered in a thick layer of broken shells, a jumble of crustacean parts and crab claws. Shells, the best secret keepers of all." This is the location of Chase's murder, and Owens is telling us that the features of the ground made a difference to what happened to him. Again, there are so many incredible lines and paragraphs of description that it's hard to pick out a few, but these examples show the care and time Owens put into her story. It's all the more reason she's allowed to break the rules of long descriptions. Next, point of view, especially as it relates to head hopping. Strictly speaking, head hopping is when the narration goes from one character to another and doesn't offer readers a signal that the point of view of the story is about to change. Readers come to stories for a variety of reasons, but one of them is to bond with characters. The only way to do that is to give readers time with those characters one-on-one. Writers can do this by staying within a particular character's point of view for the duration of a scene or even a chapter. A natural break on the page signals to readers that a change is coming, making it easy to accept a new point of view. If writers hop from one point of view to another without that signal, readers are often jarred out of the moment. They get distracted, their brains get kicked out of the story, and they have to reorient themselves. Do it enough times, and readers will drop a story. That's why writing experts advise against it, unless you know what you're doing, unless you're breaking the rules for a reason. In the case of Crawdads, Owens head hops once in a while, and it's almost unnoticeable. Why? Well, for one thing, her descriptions have set the mood for the book. This isn't a breezy beach read where you can get distracted and skim paragraphs and still know what's going on. This is a book that quietly but firmly requests your attention for every single line and every page. The mood is contemplative, introspective. For most of it, readers are inside Kaya's point of view, seeing the world as she sees it. And Kaya's used to spending days, weeks even, all by herself, observing nature, painting, writing, reading. We get so used to sitting by Kaya's side and just breathing that we don't realize when the narration takes us just for a moment into someone else's point of view. In chapter 17, Tate has begun teaching Kaya to read and discovers that she has a voracious appetite for books. The narration says, "After Tate started his senior year in September, he couldn't come to Kaya's place as often, but when he did, he brought her discarded textbooks from school. He didn't say a word about the biology books being too advanced for her, so she plowed through chapters she wouldn't have seen for 4 years in school. 'Don't worry,' he'd say, 'you'll get a little more every time you read it.' And that was true." The second sentence, "he didn't say a word about the biology books being too advanced for her," is technically not from Kaya's point of view. She wouldn't have known that information. Only Tate would. The story has slipped from Kaya to Tate. In the last sentence, after Tate tells Kaya not to worry, that she'll get it in time, the narration slips to an omniscient voice when it says, "and that was true." Within a single paragraph, the point of view has moved between three different characters, but readers won't be disturbed in the slightest. It's just a natural progression of Kaya's story. A few pages later, Kaya asks Tate point blank why he's teaching her to read. He answers, and in the next paragraph, the narration goes on. It says, "He didn't mention how he felt sorry for her being alone, that he knew how the kids had treated her for years, how the villagers called her the marsh girl and made up stories about her. But that wasn't the main reason he'd left feathers for Kaya in the forest, or why he kept coming to see her. The other words Tate didn't say were his feelings for her that seemed tangled up between the sweet love for a lost sister and the fiery love for a girl." This is a more pronounced example of head hopping because it lasts a full two paragraphs. After the second one ends, the story goes back to Kaya's point of view. So why does this work? Leading up to the first paragraph, when Kaya asks Tate why he's teaching her, Owens tells us the two are sitting on a log in the woods. That's it. They're not doing anything. They're just sitting on the log. By setting the mood and giving us detailed descriptions, Owens has helped us settle into the story. So if Kaya and Tate are just sitting, Owens can risk a quick trip into Tate's thoughts without upending Kaya's story. Both the head hopping and the description dovetail into the third topic, pacing. Depending on the genre, often books will skip along from scene to scene, from action to action. Even when characters are sitting or talking, often they're still moving. In the case of Crawdads, though, Kaya actually spends a lot of time observing, thinking, planning. She's left behind at the age of 10 to raise herself. Everyone who left her thought someone else would pick up the slack of taking care of the youngest child. No one did, so Kaya's lived alone for more than a decade. Take a second and consider what that means. Think about the last time you were completely alone for more than, say, an hour. The stillness you would inevitably feel. The quiet. Now, multiply that by 15 some odd years. It would be a given that Kaya would move at a measured pace. All of her actions would be careful, thought out. She would only talk when she deemed it right to do so, when she thought the person receiving her words would value them. By building her protagonist and her story world with these qualities, Owens sets readers up to expect and even enjoy a slower pace. That's why we can enjoy paragraph after paragraph of lush descriptions. That's why, even though we're dying to find out who killed Chase and why, we're willing to wait for the answer. Owens doesn't rush anything because Kaya never has and never will. When Kaya becomes an acclaimed author, it's for paintings that take time and years to get right. So Owens creates a situation that would allow for Kaya to have that space undisturbed. I envy the editor who got to see this manuscript first and who got to help Owens shape this world. No one writes a perfect manuscript right out of the gate, but the book's tone and voice reveal an author who has burrowed into her work. When writers come to me with some sense of confidence and heft in their manuscripts, it makes the work so much more enjoyable, just like this book is for all of us who've loved it. Now it's time for you to give it a try with more writing exercises. The first one is, you guessed it, on description. Do you remember that spot you found outside where you observed the world around you for 10 minutes? You can go back there, or you can find another quiet spot outdoors, a park or a lake maybe. Now, pick a character. You don't have to spend a lot of time on this. It can be as simple as just saying your character is a woman or a boy. If you're feeling up to a real challenge, try an animal. Just pick a character and imagine this character visiting the spot where you are. Spend 10 minutes describing everything about that character in that place. But don't give this character a story yet. No flaws or conflicts, just description. You can talk about what the character is wearing, how he or she interacts with the landscape. Do they skip rocks in the water or pick a flower? If so, how big is the rock? What color is the flower? What's the texture of the petals? Are there more skipping rocks nearby? Is it sunny today or cloudy? Is the weather warm or cool? Be sure to describe the day and place where you are, just with your character there instead of you. And try to make it as realistic and concrete as possible. Then comes the second writing exercise, point of view. For the next 10 minutes, get into your character's head. Why did this person come to this spot today? Are they happy or sad? Try to weave in a little description if possible. If they're holding the skipping rock, describe how it feels in their hand. Don't spend too much time forcing yourself to come up with an answer. Just go with what comes to mind and build around that. What you've written so far probably has an easy feel to it. No urgency, no rushing around. Let's change the pace so we can compare the difference. For the last writing exercise, pick something that will change the pace of the scene and spend 10 minutes writing about it. Does your character's cell phone ring with some unexpected news? Does it start to rain cats and dogs? Does an actual dog show up and start to chase them? Compare the slower pace of the earlier section with the later portion. See how changing the elements around your character changes the pace? There's a time and place for a scene that moves along at a good clip, and there's also a time and place for a scene that slows down. When you can see the clear difference between the two, it becomes easier to decide how to control different aspects of the story. It also becomes clear how the different fundamentals of writing, like description, point of view, and pacing, work together.
Oh, golly gee, wouldn't you know it? We've got to talk about Dandelion Web Marketing. They are one of our sponsors for this episode, and we're happy to have them aboard because Dandelion Web Marketing helps writers build a thriving author platform through strategic web marketing. So if you're the kind of author who's out there trying to build a platform, maybe you're new to this, maybe you're not new to this, but you're realizing, boy, I should really have a stronger web presence. Well, if you're not sure if you're on track with your website, you can get one of Dandelion Web Marketing's author website audits and find out. Listeners to the RightsCast Network right now can receive 50% off. And these audits will look at your site's content, security, design, search engine optimization, and more. And Dandelion will provide you with insight into what you might do to better connect with your audience. So to learn the strengths and weaknesses of your current website and save 50% along the way, visit dandelionwebmarketing.com/rightscast to learn more. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/rightscast.
The pace of Owens' book is a good reminder for writers on a much broader level, too. As a child, I consumed books like some people consume their meals. I would read and then reread the ones I liked best. Because I read so much and so often, on a subconscious level, I think I must have decided somewhere along the way that writing books would happen as fast as reading them. Later in my life, that expectation translated to the publication of books as well. You wrote, you published, and you went on to the next book. I never had a specific time frame in mind, but I think I just assumed it would just happen fast. Within months, maybe. Surely no longer than a year. As a child, anything longer than that felt like an eternity anyway. Since becoming a freelance editor, I know. I started following the publishing industry more closely, subscribing to newsletters, reading them almost as voraciously as I read books. I still read a lot, of course, but now I get why it takes a while, for the writing part at least, to become a published novelist. In the case of Crawdads and other books I adore, like Doomsday Book by Connie Willis or All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, the authors took their time, almost a decade or more, each. They probably didn't spend every waking minute of those years on their manuscripts, but the care and love are palpable on every page. Readers feel it. They see it, and they're willing to wait for it. Because Owens took time to develop and nurture this book, she's taken liberties that most first-time authors don't, or can't, really, and they work. For example, as the youngest of five children, Kaya doesn't get a say of any kind in her house. When her mother leaves, she doesn't come back, contrary to what young Kaya might want. Eventually, everyone in Kaya's life abandons her. She grows up without context in her life. She doesn't know her family history or how it came to a point where she was raising herself from the age of 10. It would be easy to hate Kaya's parents. The book is mostly from Kaya's point of view, so we see everything through her eyes. We feel her pain and her intense loneliness. Owens, though, gives us a quick glimpse into the backstory. She breaks the fourth wall by giving readers information that Kaya will never have, which might seem unfair to the young protagonist, but balances out why her parents did what they did. This comes in chapter 16 of the book, when Kaya finally learns to read enough that she can pull out the family Bible and read the full names of her parents. As she sits and contemplates this tiny piece of information, the only piece she'll really know of the people tasked with raising her, Owens pivots. She gives readers a glimpse into how Kaya's parents, Jake and Maria, met. Owens writes, "She sat there for a few minutes with the Bible open on the table, her family before her." Time ensures children never know their parents young. Kaya would never see the handsome Jake swagger into an Asheville soda fountain in the early 1930s, where he spotted Maria Jacques, a beauty with black curls and red lips, visiting from New Orleans. Over a milkshake, he told her his family owned a plantation and that after school, he'd study to be a lawyer and live in a columned mansion. It's the start of the Great Depression, so Jake's dreams never come true. Instead, he becomes an alcoholic, and even fighting in World War II doesn't restore his pride. He just continues to drink away the family's money, his wife's trust in him, and everything meaningful in his life. Writing experts often like to say don't use flashbacks. Some of them allow for flashbacks, but sparingly. Here, Owens takes readers back to Jake and Maria's past, and readers get everything they need to know about why Maria walks away from the family, and then, eventually, Jake does too, all the while keeping the secret from Kaya. Two rules, broken so easily yet with such elegance that readers won't even bat an eye. Owens's writing style and the setting of the book, The Marshlands, allow for this kind of leeway. It's also proof that good books are rule breakers because they follow all the other rules of writing with ease. The advice, less is more, means that often writers can accomplish with a few words what they might take paragraphs to do. In chapter 26 of Crawdads, Tate has gone to college to pursue his degree and his dreams. Kaya is left behind with fragments of her heart. She lets Chase Andrews into her life, but even she knows her relationship with him is a dim reflection of what she shared with Tate. Still, she's willing to try. When Chase makes a joke that reveals he's not Kaya's intellectual equal, Kaya doesn't mock him. Instead, the narrative says, she laughed for his sake, something she'd never done, giving away another piece of herself just to have someone else. The gravity of those two lines tells us all we need to know about what the break with Tate and the subsequent relationship with Chase mean to Kaya. It also echoes the earlier advice of sharing information with the reader that the character will never know. Chase never finds out what it cost Kaya to laugh at his joke, even though he really wasn't funny. Another area where Owens excels is how she uses the elements. In chapter 29, after bumping into him during a rare trip into town, Kaya discovers that Chase has been cheating on her and is engaged to another girl. She grabs the bread she was going to use for a picnic with him and heads to her beach where she often feeds the gulls. Owens writes, "A strong ocean breeze pushed up the path so that when she emerged on the beach, at least she had the wind to lean on." The power of that sentence is incredible. Here in central Illinois, where we experience gusting winds of up to 40 miles per hour on a regular basis, I have an instant picture in my mind of what it means to fight the wind when I'm outside the house. I know the ferocity of that wind and what it feels like to push against it for every step. In the moment when her heart's been broken a second time, Kaya is in a place where she might fight the wind. Instead, she has the opportunity to lean on it, to give into it, to use something from the natural habitat she loves for comfort, even as it's something that could also harm her. Owens has taken the wind and turned it into a friend of sorts for Kaya. She's made it a positive presence in her life when everything else seems to have gone against her. She's reminded Kaya, and us, that there's one constant in Kaya's life when nothing else will be there for her. Nature. With this kind of writing throughout the entire book, Owens makes us take a second and sometimes a third or fourth look at her writing. These kinds of sentences don't come without care, and time and patience. They don't come without thoughtful consideration of the story, the circumstances in it, the protagonist, and who she is through and through. Often in our Instagram, Pinterest world, we're looking for fast entertainment and easy access to it. Owens's book is neither fast nor easy. It takes a lot to buy into the idea that a family would abandon a 10-year-old girl and that she'd be so accomplished at raising herself. But Owens invites us in with a gentle nod and an outstretched hand. As writers, we can and should look for every opportunity to elevate our prose. We can take heart that writing and publishing don't have to happen with a finger snap. A meaningful writing career can develop over time. Readers would probably benefit the most from that scenario. I know I certainly would as a writer as I push myself to get better in my craft. And that's the best kind of relationship after all, one born of time and care. So let's try a writing exercise that lets you build a relationship with your reader. Take that piece you started about your new character. You know, the one who was skipping rocks across the lake only to get a phone call with unexpected news. Consider this person and the sudden change of pace in the scene and their lives. Now, take a step back and share a secret with the reader about the character, something they'll never know. This might seem strange, sharing information that will remain hidden from the character, but it's useful for a variety of reasons. It builds a relationship. It helps to build backstory, which makes your characters deeper and richer. It offers opportunities to create more conflict and tension for your characters, and it allows you to get to know the characters in a way that they won't even know themselves. Kaya is a girl of the marsh. She's also accused of murder. Her heart's been broken, but her spirit endures. She knows that certain things happening to her shouldn't happen, don't happen to others, but she straightens her spine against the hardships. After her mother walks away from the family and the shack in the first chapter, the last paragraph says, Kaya returned to the porch steps later and waited for a long time, but as she looked at the end of the lane, she never cried. Her face was still, her lips a simple thin line under searching eyes. But Ma didn't come back that day either. Those of us who have been writing for a long time have written about abandonment in some form or the other. Many of you may have even written about child abandonment, but how many of us have exercised the same patience and careful development of our stories the way Owens has hers? In some ways, it makes sense that the book embodies that patience. Owens took almost a decade to write Crawdads. Imagine taking all that time to make sure every single word and line sat on the page the way it should. Then, after submitting it for publication, she would have worked with an editor who helped polish every single page again. The most important takeaway for me, though, from Owens's book is the fact that readers still want to read. Pandemic or not, politics or not, readers still want quality books that challenge them. Crawdads really forced me to slow down and think. It's not that the prose is especially difficult, but Kaya's world is one where small movements matter. A breath, a pause, and everything can change in an instant. Owens reminds us all throughout the book of the careful way Kaya built her world. In chapter 10, after she's abandoned by everyone in her immediate family, Kaya is deliberating about whether she should just give herself up to the authorities. Then she decides she can't leave the marsh, the gulls, and her home, which she calls the shack. Owens writes, "Sitting in the last of the candlelight, she had an idea. Earlier than usual, she got up the next morning when the tide was low, pulled on her overalls, and slipped out with a bucket, claw knife, and empty toe bags. Squatting in the mud, she collected muscles along the sloughs like Ma had taught her, and in 4 hours of crouching and kneeling, had two croaker sacks full." Think about the time and effort in all of that. Kaya is sitting by candlelight and thinking about her life at 10 years old. She's contemplating what to do next by the light of a wick. Then she gets up the next morning, earlier than usual, which makes me wonder just how early she got up in the first place, and proceeds to spend 4 hours digging for mussels. If that isn't patience, I don't know what is. The entire book is full of sentences like this. When Kaya is feeding her beloved gulls on her small strip of beach, or when she's hiding in the marsh waiting for the people looking for her to leave. Through it all, despite the times when other characters or people in real life would have panicked or made hasty mistakes, Kaya takes her time to consider the situation and act as if she's almost one with the natural habitat around her. Of course, there's a murder mystery woven through all of this. The chapters pretty much alternate between Kaya's bringing up of herself and the quote-unquote present day of 1969, when two police officers are doing their due diligence to find out who killed Chase Andrews and why. The appeal of a murder story most likely drew in many readers, but with Owens's ease of language and the way she lets the words breathe, I think I would have been happy just reading more about Kaya's life. Owens paints pictures with her words. She leads us into a time when people probably did more dreaming on a more consistent, more frequent basis. The kind of dreaming where you sat by candlelight and thought about your life and what you wanted to do with it. And more than anything, she proves that we're still able to dream that way if we just give ourselves the time to do so. I dream of writing books like this, the kind that captivate the imagination and make people hold words so dear. About 100 pages into Crawdads, when Kaya finally learns to read, Tate guides her through her first group of words. The narration says, "Slowly, she unraveled each word of the sentence. There are some who can live without wild things, and some who cannot." "Oh," she said. "Oh." "You can read, Kaya. There will never be a time again when you can't read." "It ain't just that," she spoke almost in a whisper. "I wasn't aware that words could hold so much. I didn't know a sentence could be so full." This crystallizes the entire book, the entire experience of reading Where the Crawdads Sing.
All right, it's R.R. Campbell. I'm back one last time in this episode, I promise, because I'm thinking about these writing exercises that Ikta has offered for us. And yes, you can go out in nature when the weather is nice and when there aren't a million people who might compromise your ability to remain properly socially distanced. But let's do another exercise right now. I want you to imagine that you are in your office, right? You're in your office or wherever it is that you prefer to write. You've got your laptop in front of you, and what's next to you? Oh, it's a cup of coffee. You coil your hands around this cup of coffee and you feel its warmth and you imbibe its scent and you think about how this coffee was sustainably produced by the wonderful people of 421 Brewhouse. Yes, do you see what I did there? I lulled you into an ad. I got you. You didn't even see it coming except for, you know, probably the music that was a tip-off to the fact this was going to be an ad anyway. 421 Brewhouse, you can get a discount with them and purchase their sustainably produced coffee by visiting their Shopify page and using code WRITESCAST at checkout. You can save yourself a couple of bucks on your purchase and receive your coffee in one of those really neat resealable pouches. Mine's still sitting around. I gotta find a way to use it. I mean, I've got things that I could be keeping fresh in that pouch, and yet I keep it up here in my office when all I need to do is bring it down to the kitchen and find something that needs to be kept fresh. I don't need to go out and buy Ziploc bags. I got 421 Brewhouse bags right here. Anyway, the point is this. Think back now to that moment in the office before you realized that I was going to try to sell you something, and coil your hands around that cup of coffee. Think about that warmth and think about how you could also get a discount if you use code WRITESCAST on the Shopify page for 421 Brewhouse. Think about it. Make it happen. Drink that coffee.
Which takes us into our last writing exercise. For this one, you can't use a device or a computer of any kind. We're going to do this old school, the way Kaya would have. Use your favorite writing instrument, a pen, a pencil, a marker, anything, and just spend a few minutes putting down on paper your writing dreams. Don't censor yourself and don't judge, just write them out. Now, think about Kaya sitting and evaluating her life by candlelight in her tiny kitchen with a wood stove. She's all alone. She has no family, no friends, no reliable supervision. Yet she makes a decision to take care of herself, and for years she does. Was it always easy? No. Did she cry and rail against the unfairness of her life? Probably. But she didn't stop trying. Look at your list of writing dreams. Number each item on that list. Now, on a fresh piece of paper, brainstorm ways you can accomplish those dreams. If you have no idea or you get stuck, make a note to find out how to do so. Come back to the WritesCast Network or ask writing friends for help. Do some research into people who know what they're talking about and check out their websites or books. Contact them and ask for their suggestions. There's a reason why we call it the writing community, because we're all in this together. Take your list and put it in a spot where you're going to see it every day. On the fridge, next to the coffee maker, beside your computer or your writing space. Make yourself look at the list every day and think of it as a to-do list and not a to-wish list. The most important thing to remember is that to do it right, storytelling takes time. It takes patience. If you're willing to spend both, the rewards you'll reap will come back to you tenfold. In Where the Crawdads Sing, Delia Owens has given us a novel that holds so much, that's so full. I hope the same for you. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or found his exercises useful, please leave the WritesCast Network a rating and review on wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the WritesCast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. To those of you who have already left us a rating and review, thank you so much. Additional thanks go to the WritesCast Network's patrons who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/WritesCast. For their support, WritesCast Network patrons get some great perks, including WritesCast swag, discounts on R.R. Campbell's editing services, and entries in monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen and Angeline Boley in supporting our programming directly today at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. Any level of contribution will get you access to some of those fantastic patron perks, so become a supporter today by making your pledge at patreon.com/WritesCast. That's patreon.com/WritesCast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors, Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit WritesCast.net/sponsors. You can stay in touch with us by visiting WritesCast.net or by saying hello on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the handle @WritesCast or by searching for the WritesCast Network. We're also available by email at writescast@gmail.com, or you can call us at 608-284-8342, where you can leave a voicemail with questions for future guests or other matters you'd like us to address in future programming. Again, that number is 608-284-8342. To reach me personally, you can visit The Right Edge, that's W-R-I-T-E, at therightedge.wordpress.com, or find me on Instagram and Twitter with my handle at @ektaargarg. That's at @ektaargarg. @ektaargarg. Thanks again for listening. Until we meet again, this is Ekta Garg. Write on and write well.
This is the WritesCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association, and always streaming at WritesCast.net.